You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Questions are all around us.
Learn.
Why is liquid cold?
Learn.
What is maths?
Learn.
Why does this, ow, hurt?
Learn.
What is the Enlightenment?
I don't know.
And now, thanks to the University of Auckland, it's time to ready, steady, learn!
Dr. Silmara Gusso is a research fellow at Liggins Institute, and she is researching the effect of vibration therapy on young people with cerebral palsy. Hello to you, Silmara.
Hello.
How are you today?
Wonderful, thank you.
That is good. I wanted to kind of begin by asking you, what is it like for someone to live with cerebral palsy?
It is hard. It is not easy. It is a condition that has a variety of health impact. So you might have people that are quite well when dealing well with it and walking around and being able to go on with their life normally. But then you have the other spectrum of it, in which you are physically very limited or mentally very limited. So they face several barriers on their day-to-day activities.
So it's very, very different for different people.
Yes. So basically, cerebral palsy is the most common childhood disability that you find. It's basically a lesion that happens in the brain before the baby is born or during the development period or shortly after delivery.
Wow.
So the injury itself is static, doesn't change over time, but the health consequences change it. So you might have people that, for example, just have a limited limp on their walk, or they just have some weakness. And then you have another extreme, that you have people that have severe problems with their coordination, balance, spasm. So it ranges from case to case, the health impact.
And what have you been researching?
Unfortunately, there is no evidence of non-invasive therapies or interventions to try to help those with musculoskeletal disability to make their bones stronger. And I think you need to understand that people with musculoskeletal disability, their muscles are not as strong as they should be. They don't have a normal mass of muscle as you and me.
Yeah.
And with that, their bones might be affected. So they might have weak bones. And with that, they have a high risk of fractures. And not only that as well, they also, during their whole life and growing up, they suffer a lot of hospital or interventions. So they have Botox therapy, surgical interventions on their tendons and their bones, which all leads to casting. And you know, when you cast your member,
yeah,
after a few weeks you remove it, you have a very reduction in your muscle mass in that area. So this gets in a cycle of events that don't lead to optimal muscle health and bone health.
Wow.
And most of the interventions that are available in physiotherapy or other conditions, they are quite focus on muscle and the muscle health, and to get the impact on the bone, you need to have a certain different approach and strength on the muscle to act on the bone, and there is very limited. So therefore, we started to investigation how vibration therapy maybe could fill that gap and assist and complement the therapy that is already available.
So can you explain how this vibration therapy does improve mobility and strength?
The mechanism by how it works is basically we stand on this plate. It is the one that we use has been specifically designed for clinical trials and medical use and research use. So it's a little bit different than those you see, you know, available.
On the ads.
Yeah. So you just stand on the plate with your feet apart, you bend a little bit your knees, and the machine does a seesaw movement. So it alternates left and right, raising it. But that raise is very low and very fast. So in a cycle, for example, of 1 minute, you might have up to 1,000 little up and down on your muscles. And that leads to a very tiny tilt on your hip. And with that, your brain and your muscles think, oh, I'm losing the balance. So it triggers the contraction of the opposite muscles of that area that is lifting or going down. So you're basically, in a simple word, you're kind of faking walking, but in a very gentle and mild muscle contraction during the time. And with that, you are potentially, we still need to understand the mechanism,
yeah,
potentially increasing the muscle tone in that area. Wow. And when you have an increase in muscle tone and you have increasing strength on that muscle, it will impact the bones on that area. And the bones, to get healthy, they need to have that strong muscle around to make the stimuli correct to do it. So that's how it potentially could work.
Wow. I mean, I read that you talked about the treatment offering not only physical but also emotional changes. What kind of changes were they, and can emotional change impact on physical change, do you think?
Definitely. I think we are not specifically looking at that, but the first trial we conducted were in adolescents, so those between 12 and 20 years of age. And it is a difficult part of life, stage of life in itself, and with the muscle condition, it makes sometimes a little bit more challenging. So usually they tend to be a little bit more shy, restricted, you know, there's some limitations on the day-to-day activities. And what we noticed, and we probably were not expecting that much, that was the feedback from the families, the participants, and the school physiotherapists saying, for example, you know, she's way more interested in the other activities of the school, is walking around more, is interacting more, or they're walking around the corridor with their chins up because some of them actually told me, I feel important because I'm part of a research and you're trying to do something that might help me and others. So I think that sense of belonging and participating was quite interesting and belonged to them as well.
Maybe a sense of kind of a little bit of hope that they can kind of in some way help their body become stronger. I mean, I know it's not like a definite thing.
No. We're very clear since the beginning that, you know, each person responds in a different way to therapy, anything, you know, in that aspect when it regards health, and that we're investigating, see who. And we were clear in saying, you know, you might not be the person that will benefit the most, but you help us to identify who would. And they feel that being part of something that might be able to help others in the future, because this is the early stages of understanding how it works, they felt quite happy about it and, you know, smiles.
Yeah.
Some of the participants, for example, that have autism spectrum, we were unsure how they would receive the therapy. And once you see the smile on their faces, you know that they're enjoying it. So, yeah, it is a certain aspects of the research that is quite positive.
Is there any research being done to prevent cerebral palsy altogether?
Well, cerebral palsy is not one thing. It's not one definition. It can occur from
So many different
things. It could be medication interfering with the brain development. It could be mother gestational problems that lead to that, delivery issues during delivery. So there is no specific cause to it. Mm. There is just a general definition. But what not only researchers around the world, but the Liggins Institute also is trying to do is finding interventions that can prevent those insults or those injuries that happen in that early stage of life, that can prevent them or can minimize them over time. So it's a very important period of development. You know, you're a little baby, you're developing. And so there is a lot of research at Liggins trying to cover different aspects of that stage of life to actually try to prevent what happens later on and the consequences of it.
So how long are you going to be conducting this research for?
Well, we've been conducting already for 4 years.
Wow.
And we are in the stage of doing some follow-ups, and we have different trials as well, looking at more severe kids with more disability, looking at different populations as well, not only cerebral palsy, but those with spinal bifida or Down syndrome and other areas that have issues with their muscle tone, their muscle coordination and balance, and seeing how can improve them or not. And we still have plans to continue going forward. We, for example, we look at the teenagers, but it will be interesting to look at younger people and see how they would receive. It would be better maybe to start early on with interventions.
And I just wanted to ask finally, why did you want to study cerebral palsy?
It is a group of health individuals that is, it's large, not only in New Zealand, but around the world. And there is very limited research on that area and affects so many people. And I work with a group of pediatric endocrinologists, and they are the ones that see quite often at their clinical clinical assessments, children that do have cerebral palsy and have severe fractures, recurrent severe fractures. So through conversations and discussions, we realized there was a lack of information and knowledge that they would benefit quite well, not only them, but other areas as well. So it was not that we just chose it. It's just something that has been observed clinically, and we noticed that there was a gap that needed to be filled.
Mm. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Silmara Gusso, for coming in this morning.
You're welcome.
And, yeah, taking the time to talk to us about this incredible research that you are conducting.
Thank you. BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.